Welcome to another episode of Romance Romp. I'm your host, Keeney Allen. Today, I have historical romance author E. Elizabeth Watson with me. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So first, just give me a little bit of an introduction on how you got into reading romance and maybe like the first book you read, stuff like that.
Certainly. I actually was a late bloomer when it came to reading romance. A lot of other authors I know have been reading it for years and years, and teenage years, they were really into it. And I actually hadn't read a romance until I was in my mid-20s.
Okay.
I was really interested in authors like Orwell, things that had a strong social commentary. And it wasn't until I started writing creatively for my children, writing fantasy, that my husband suggested I write something that I had never read before. He was sort of challenging me, and he said, you should, you know, pick up something that you'd never normally read, and you should try to write something like that. And he said, you should try to write a romance. And I laughed at him at first, and I was like, are you serious? It was the farthest thing from what I would have picked up. But the idea stuck in the back of my head, and before I knew it, I was going to the library and picking up some books, and the first book I read, I was hooked. It was so enjoyable. It was, the books I read were by Sarah Zettel. She has a Camelot series, and those were, they weren't super intense in terms of heat level, but just the journey and the adventure of it, I was completely hooked, and at that point, I would just stock up on romance books, and at that point, I really started writing my first novel.
Okay. Yep. So would you say that you've read mostly historical, or?
I've read mostly historical, but I read within the entire genre. I really like paranormals.
Okay.
So building up a library of those, and author lists that I like to follow. But, you know, I've read contemporary westerns, I just enjoy, I enjoy the relationship aspect of a romance novel. And so if it's a good story, I'll pick it up.
I mean, I think that's the tie that binds, regardless of the genre type. It's really the relationship that's the centered. You know, and I've said that I read almost exclusively contemporary, you know, but that's just because I was telling somebody, I was like, I'm kind of a lazy reader. Like historical, sometimes it's really, it's just different to kind of put yourself in that, because everything's so different, like the language, the dress, everything. So it's not bad, but it's just, and same with paranormal. It's just different. It's different worlds. And so but as a reader, I just choose to stay where it doesn't take me too much. You know, but I did read a historical recently, Cecilia Grant. I think it was A Lady Awakened, which everybody was like, you need to read this. And it was on sale. So I was like, I can read this for 99 cents as opposed to $8. And it was really good. I mean, it's definitely a lot different than contemporary, but still it's. The relationship is at the core of it, so that's really the same. So
And I really enjoy historicals. It's the idea of, as you were saying, being transported to this time period that we have no way of really knowing.
Right.
We only know from what was recorded in history. We apply the rest and romanticize it and create this nostalgia, but it's so fun to get immersed in the world.
Yeah, I had read a book, or actually it's a series of books. It's by Emma Barry and Genevieve Turner. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but it's set more like in the 50s and 60s, and they're all kind of centered around like NASA, these people, or whatever, a fake space name. And so I'm like, I would love to read more books that are in like the 40s, 50s, and 60s. But I don't really see a lot of those. I also haven't done a lot of research on them. So if they're out there, I just haven't found them. But those types of historicals, I really enjoy that. But so once you started reading, because you said your husband suggested that you try this like as a challenge. So how did you decide that you wanted to write this pretty much exclusively?
Right now, I write it exclusively. Mm-hmm. I do have manuscripts that are in other areas of romance, different subgenres. But right now, I'm really building up a body of work in medieval.
Okay.
I think, you know, at the time I was in graduate school and we lived in England, we lived in Northern England, and it was just very hard not to be influenced by mm-hmm. everything around you. You know, you cross a bridge and it was built 300 years ago, mm-hmm. and, you know, you pass a building and it was, you know, it still has the half timbering showing, and, you know, at one of the older Anglo-Saxon church sites was just around the corner from our flat. And this is all intermeshed with the modern architecture mm-hmm. and the modern transit system. But, you know, you're passing places of historic significance everywhere you go. And so that was very inspiring. Mm-hmm. That, and of course, I'm reading these historicals. They were the first ones I picked up. I didn't even know how to search for mm-hmm. Romance titles.
Sure.
You know, I'm really a newbie. So I picked up books based on their covers, and they happened to be the Sarah Zettel books that had these sweeping gowns and it was just very pretty, long, long, feathery hair. And, mm-hmm. You know, I'm reading these books, and they're set in, you know, this medieval England, and I'm living in Northern England, and so that was just very inspiring and mm-hmm. very influential. And you know, as a student, I was also I was an archaeology student,
okay.
so I'm already studying ancient things mm-hmm. and evaluating them from more of an academic perspective. So it just kind of seemed that's just where the chips fell. You know,
sure.
I don't think I was seeking any particular area; it just happened that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So how many books do you already have out? Like, how far are you in mm-hmm. your author journey?
Right, right. So I'm a newer author. I started writing my first release, Prince of Lions, actually years ago, and published it originally under a different title. I self-published it, and it wasn't until I really started to pursue writing seriously as a mm-hmm. career endeavor that I was talking with an agent. She had some suggestions for how I needed to put myself out there, and I decided to take this book that I'd written and polish it up, have it edited mm-hmm. properly, you know, do the whole works mm-hmm. and really make this a serious thing. And so I re-released that at the beginning of last year.
Okay.
And that was my first book. The sequel to that is coming out next month, mm-hmm. February. And it's actually an entire series. As of now, there's 7 books in the series.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. It sort of follows the journey of this family, but each character in the it has their own story mm-hmm. you know, in each different sequel. Have some more. I have another book coming out mid-year sometime. It's with Entangled. So that will be my first traditional publisher publication. But
so that's not part of the series?
Mm-mm,
that's like
a different one.
A standalone? Or is it a different series?
It there are two. There's that book and a sequel. Each book centers around a sister. So there are two sisters.
Okay.
The first book is entitled A Lady at Arms, and that's the one that was contracted. There is an option in the contract for a second book, and that would be the sequel book. So I'm just waiting on edits back for A Lady at Arms and get cracking on that. And
so your other series, the 7-book series, so mm-hmm. you said that's the first one that you wrote mm-hmm. and then you polished it up, released mm-hmm. it last year, and then you have the second one coming out mm-hmm. in February. So tell me a little bit about that. Tell me about that series and then that book.
Right. So the first book was entitled Prince of Lions, and that's what the series is called. It's my Prince of Lions series. The second book is entitled Son of Ballymead, and that title is very specific to the family in the story.
Mm-hmm.
The first book centers around a character named Gwyneth. She has been in a loveless, very difficult marriage. She's recently widowed. Her husband was abusive. She's been abandoned. And she is found struggling to survive, really, after being thrown out by the hero of this story, Sir William Cadogan. He is the first knight of the Bainic Kingdom. He serves King Bane. This is an entirely fictional world. And he himself can relate to her. He grew up a bastard son. Mm-hmm. He was mistreated by his stepfather. And it wasn't until he realized that who his true parentage was that he was removed from his home. And he was raised to adulthood from there and really strove to be a warrior. He was young and successful, but he had vowed never, ever to marry. He didn't want to become the man his father was, his stepfather. Mm-hmm. At the time, he doesn't know that, though. So anyway, he and Gwyneth, they really bond over this. And in the process of bringing her home, he, of course, loses his heart to her. Her father says, no, you can't marry her. We've just barely gotten her back. Mm. And so they have to come together. There's growing turmoil in the kingdom, and he's sent off to war, and it's against the family that wronged her. So this is personal for him now. And it's a great tale, and I love it. It's my baby. Son of Ballymead, my second release, is about Gwyneth's brother.
Okay.
She has five brothers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she's the youngest of the family. But her, the youngest brother, the one closest to her in age, she's always been very close with. And so you meet him, the Prince of Lions. Son of Ballymead is about him.
Okay.
In his attempts to get Gwyneth back out of this family that was horrible to her, he's attacked and blinded when he's there at the gates of the enemy family. And so he has some struggles to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And his betrothed, a girl that he's loved for years and years, and once he was blind and maimed, he never thought he had a future with her.
They're tortured.
Families betrothed them to each other. Yeah. She has been blinded in fever as a girl. And so they're very, actually, this book starts out, they're very excited. They wanted to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting to start this journey. And then the political turmoil erupts again, and she's kidnapped and dragged away, and she's blind, and so she's helpless, and or so they think. So she needs to figure out how to come out of her shell and save herself. And at the same point, William has to overcome these obstacles, these physical struggles that he has to figure out how to locate her and get her back.
Oh,
so,
okay. So you brought a little bit with you today.
Yes.
So if you want to go ahead and read that, that'd be great. So,
and this is from the first chapter.
Okay.
Lady Amber's heart soared. William of Ballymead was visiting today. True, his brother Gavin also arrived, for Gavin was to marry her older sister, and they would all have a double wedding in 3 months. But all that mattered was that William would be here today. Nothing could make her happier. She fingered the wooden figurine she kept in her skirt pocket. Ever since the age of 12, when her breasts began to bud and her shape began to transform into that of a woman, William had given her a carved dove at Christmastide, and she had long since developed the habit of keeping the latest dove in her pockets as a good luck charm. It had been 2 months since they had last seen each other. Their previous meeting had been in the capital of Bane, celebrating the marriage of William's widowed sister, Gwyneth, to the Prince of Bane, her second husband. Amber remembered William's hand sneaking into hers as they sat side by side, listening to the ruckus of dancers, laughter, stomping, and music that filled the towering ceilings of the King's Great Hall. Will's fingertips had drawn circles upon her skin. She held her hand now as the memory caused tingling to surge anew. He had leaned into her ear, their hand holding hidden in the volume of her skirts, and jested in her ear about the fanfare, making her giggle. She giggled now. Will had become a reclusive man these past 2.5 years after suffering the injury that had taken his eyesight and his left foot. But she had heard through Sarah's gossip, and her sister was excellent at gossiping, that Will had told his sister, "Knowing I'll marry Amber makes me smile again." Such words filled Amber's heart with joy. She spun around, her basket of berries swinging on her arm, so happy she could not contain herself. "Does Will have any idea what a smile he brings to my face?" Probably not, but once he arrived today, he would. She would tell him. The youngest son of Ballymead might not be in line to inherit his familial Highland fief famous for its mead. He might not be perfect in the physical sense, but he was perfect for her. Young, devoted, and loyal, that he had strong muscles from racking cask upon cask of mead, and warm, soft kisses was an added boon. She had fancied him all of her youth, and blessed be, but God finally saw fit to give her to him. Soon, very soon, they would be married. She would be his wife. He would be her husband. "What will I wear when he arrives?" she thought aloud, halting in her tracks. It wasn't as if it mattered, for neither of them could see her gown. She was blind, too, due to fever in her youth, which of course was why their fathers thought to pair them together. But still, a pretty dress would make me feel pretty. Much like the lavish textures of her gown that Sarah described as the fine compliment to her complexion made her feel decadent. "What am I doing out here collecting berries?" she gasped. "He'll be here any moment." Sakes, but she daydreamed too much. She knew she looked a mess. She wore an old gown, one of Sarah's cast-offs. Her hair was tied back in a bun against her head, lacking any semblance of styling. There was no point in wearing fine fabrics and doting upon her appearance when she spent her days climbing through shrubs, foraging for the berries and blossoms she used to make her soaps. Such a chore would ruin her skirts, and though her father was a vassal of the king and a lord of Dunstanwoodshire, he would grouse about the expense of replacing a fine gown ruined for such a silly reason. She adjusted her basket and made her way out of the glen, heading back to the Dunstanwoodshire castle proper, the home of her birth. She knew it by heart, even if she could no longer see it. She knew the path, how many steps it took to reach the end of the berry patches, and had long since stopped relying on the rope fencing her brothers had strung along the path so she could visit the glen on her own. She knew each dip, each rut, and could find the little bridge made out of rough planks that carried her over the stream, running through their fief and out beneath the wooden brattices delineating their property. She had yet to arrive at the side entrance when a commotion erupted in the bailey. Voices, the clinking of weapons, and sounds of excited serving staff filled the yards. Horse hooves plodded to a halt. She heard the voice of her father and Lord Loudon of Ballymead. "Good day to you, Loudon man," boomed her father, Edward of Dunstanwoodshire. "And to you," Lord Loudon boomed back. "He's here," Amber whispered, her stomach flipping with anticipation. The deep voices of Ballymead's men, her father, and her two brothers, Angus and Morgan, filled the background with their greetings. She could hear giggling coming toward her as Sarah and their maid descended the path. "They're here, sister," Sarah breathed, grasping her hand, excitement giving her voice a nervous wobble. Amber felt Sarah wrench her forward. Their maid and Sarah put their heads to hers and giggled some more. "William of Ballymead is still quite handsome, my lady," Gretchen, the maid, teased. "What with his finely pressed tunic, he appears as though he pained himself to look impeccable for you." "And I'm wearing this raggedy mess," Amber muttered, pulling her hands free. "Indeed you are. Look at you," Sarah tisked gently, taking her hands once again to guide her. "I know it matters not to you, considering neither of you can see, but everyone else can." Amber frowned. Sarah must have seen it, for she stopped now. "Here, sister, let me help." Amber withdrew her hands again, feeling Sarah's expert fingers push loose curls over her ears and tug stoutly at the wrinkles in her bodice. Sarah sighed. "It's the best I can do. Come along." Her sister grabbed her hands again, but Amber withdrew once more. She didn't need Sarah guiding her. Her family's remarks about her blindness had long since ceased to hurt. At least it no longer hurt like the gouge it once was. Her sister simply stated a fact. William was blind, as was she, and the two would make a fine match because of it. True, Will had doted upon her while she grew up. Amber was friends with his sister, and he had delighted in teasing her. Then, as she approached womanhood, he had started carving those little doves for her. Their families were long-standing friends, remote in the Highlands of Maine. Will's father was a childhood friend of the king, which made the House of Loudon an attractive alliance. And with Will's sister Gwyneth married into the Bainock house, the Loudon family held much clout with the capital so far away to the south. "He might not see my gown with his eyes, Sarah, but he might feel it," Amber reminded. Sarah inhaled. "Goodness, but you're always so quiet and polite. What a scandalous thing to say." Amber smiled, resisting a shake of the head. Normally she wouldn't say any number of things rolling through her mind, but that didn't mean she wasn't thinking them. "He's blind, as you so aptly pointed out. If he wants to see me at all, he must do so with his hands. There's nothing vulgar about that, considering we are to be married." She certainly hoped he would touch her cheek, give her a gentle kiss when he was certain they were alone. And oh, now the memories assaulted her. Her and Will alone, in the meadery at Ballymead after their betrothal was sealed. "How he kissed me."
Ooh, okay. Thank you for reading that.
You're welcome.
So, sounds very interesting. So, One of the things that I thought of while you were reading that was something, well, again, I have very little experience with historicals, but it seems like for most of them, or potentially I'm just making this up, but they have to be a little bit more of a slow burn type of romance, especially in regards to like having sex, because of like the nature of the times, like, you know, a lot of times in contemporaries, you can open them and they're like having sex like in chapter two, right. Or so it just seems like with historical, maybe you have to like kind of build to that a little bit more.
I think so, to some degrees. Now, there are some historicals that are very erotic too. Mm-hmm. The ones I generally lean towards, and of course I read everything, I read the entire spectrum and I enjoy it, but with historicals, I probably read sexier historicals than quite right. but there is, you know, especially if your lead, if your heroine is a lady, you know, there are certain rules of propriety,
right.
And usurping that, or, you know, heaven forbid, eloping or something like that is, it wasn't unheard of, but it was also definitely cause for talk and, you know, ruined reputations.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, even in that little blurb at the end where you talked about how she said, like, he would have to touch her to see, and then her sister was like, how vulgar is that?
Right.
Like, I mean, in a contemporary, or even in contemporary society, it's so much more acceptable now that, like, when you're dating somebody, that they might touch you.
Right, right.
Like,
and it would be okay.
Right. It would be totally okay, and nobody would frown on it or think otherwise of it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just a difference of times, that's all. So, yeah. So would you say, you touched on it a little bit, but you said that you read steamier than you write. So would you say you write like...
I'm probably in the middle of the heat spectrum. I really like books by Monica McCarty, and hers are very well researched, and they're in-depth plots, but they're also very, the more graphic. But that works with her voice and her style, and it's really the tales she weaves just pull me in. So, but I don't shy away from that. I think the books that I've sent to Entangled are a little bit steamier than these. These are more adventure romances.
Okay.
But the element is still there. I don't close the door on my scenes or any of that. I think I really I enjoy that when I'm reading.
Yeah. There's, you know, I don't know, I was talking about this recently. I was like, there's nothing, again, this is all in context of the way that I like, but I'm like, you know, there's nothing worse than you're like really into a book and you really like this couple, and then like the door is closed.
Right.
And you, it's like, wait.
For me, it's just like, it's the final. It's that part of the bonding that occurs where you know that whatever obstacle is in their way, like, you know that they've bonded
right.
at that point. You
yeah.
know, that initial bond, the final,
yes.
like the final piece of that first yes. bond. And so then when they can't be together, as the story progresses, you just are more like, no,
right.
overcome it.
Exactly.
And yeah, I've read some that were closed door.
So have I.
And they were certainly enjoyable. But I do feel a level of fulfillment, especially when I'm writing too.
Like, I'm sure.
I want it to come full circle from the inception of their interest to sort of this completion of their bond together. And I feel that for me as a writer, it's harder to convey that if I did close the door.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I could see that. And, you know, the handful of books now where it's closed door. I mean, I get it. And, you know, maybe authors just aren't comfortable, or they just don't feel like it's necessary.
Right.
But I like what you say about like the completion of their bond together, because that's really what it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's just
You know, and as a writer and a reader of romance, I feel that even if it's totally erotic and spicy, it can be when it's done in such a way where, yes, the heat is there and, you know, it's like super intense, but when the story is written in such a way that that's still beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
a necessary element. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's not like gratuitous and they're just.
Right. If it's part of the plot and it furthers mm-hmm. the story along, then it deserves to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that this book is like part of a 7-part series. Mm-hmm. So this has been something that I've noticed and have talked to the other authors about. But like as an author, do you feel like you need to write a series like for publishers, for yourself, all of the above?
I don't think that I don't feel a compulsion to write series. Mm-hmm. I'm not averse to it either.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote Prince of Lions with a lot. It's a thick book and it has a lot going on in it. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of characters in it. And I wanted the freedom to then explore those characters in the future. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I didn't have any plans for or against a series. Mm-hmm. It was when I started getting reader reviews and a little email here, a message on, you know, my Facebook author mm-hmm. page. I want more. I want to know more about this family. There needs to be a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
There was a review that was done where they said Prince of Lions demands a sequel. And so at that point I thought, well, if there's enough interest in this, and I did create characters where I could develop
mm-hmm.
them, I decided to go ahead and transform it into one.
Sure.
So, yeah.
That makes sense because, you know, there's nothing quite like reading a book and even if the author doesn't intend to, sometimes there's secondary or even tertiary characters that mm-hmm. you're like, I want to know more about them
yeah,
because
yeah.
of whatever they have, you know, piqued my interest. But I just see it curious as like, as far as like an author, mm-hmm. do you feel obligated, especially like when shopping it out for publishers,
yeah.
like, do you, because I feel like as I've been reading romance pretty regularly, like I'd say last 5 years, I see more and more series, mm-hmm. authors putting out series.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I get it, but I just wonder, is it like, sometimes I wonder if you guys feel obligated to do so.
Yeah. And, you know, I haven't really done a lot of research into that. I do notice that too. I mm-hmm. mean, series are a popular thing,
mm-hmm.
And not just with romance, but you look at like young adult
right.
series are huge and fantasy, you know, series, mm-hmm. series. And I think, I don't know if it's publisher-initiated pressure or if it's readership.
Right.
Or if it's a little of both or if mm-hmm. they're playing off each other. But I do know as a reader, when I'm reading a book that I'm so engrossed in, and I'm not just engrossed in the love story of the characters, mm-hmm. but I'm engrossed in the world.
Right.
You know, I don't want to get ripped out of that world.
Right.
And so when you come to the end and you close the book and you have like that book hangover mm-hmm. where you're just like, I can't do anything until I get over this. I think a lot of readers are like, no, give me more of that.
Right.
And that's what I experienced mm-hmm. from readers. So, you know, but and maybe because of that, publishers have realized it sells. But honestly, I haven't looked
yeah.
into the actual data on it and
yeah.
numbers and, you know.
Yeah, me neither. I'm just, you mm-hmm. know, curious. I see it, so it makes me wonder. But
yeah.
I also love a good series. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it feels comfortable as a reader because you already know some of the people and what's going on and all that mm-hmm. good stuff. So so I like it. So you're going to self-publish that whole series probably?
Probably.
Okay.
I haven't pitched this series to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I was a second prize quarterfinalist in the 2014 Amazon Breakthrough Novel
oh, okay.
Award competition. And that manuscript, which is completely unrelated mm-hmm. to Prince of Lions, was what I used to try to get an agent,
mm-hmm.
try to, you know, whether I needed one or not, I just wanted to explore it and determine if that was the route for me.
Mm-hmm.
And there was interest in it. I had 5 different agents request the full manuscript.
Wow.
Just the other day, an agent that I just assumed they passed like
mm-hmm.
2 years ago. An email popped up in my inbox. Is this still available?
Oh, wow.
We'd like to read it. And they'd already been given the full manuscript, but it had been
mm-hmm.
over a year. And at this point, I'm like, well, I'm yeah. a little late. But, you know, as I was doing that, I realized I had something worthwhile. It, you know, mm-hmm. garnered enough interest. Oddly enough, that isn't the book that my agent contracted with mm-hmm. Entangled. She had wanted to see more, and so I sent her a partial of mm-hmm. A Lady at Arms at the time. It was only about 100 pages, and she had said, send this to me when it's done. She wasn't my agent yet. Mm-hmm. She was mm-hmm. talking with me. She said, you know, it sounds like it'll be a good story. Send it to me. So I worked and finished it and sent it. And so it's that one and mm-hmm. the sister book to it that she took. But the other one's still on the back burner. It's there. And yeah. you know, she knows it's there. And
yeah, it seems like a lot of authors are kind of doing like a mix of having some some books traditionally published. Mm-hmm. And self-publishing other books. Mm-hmm. So that definitely seems to be like a trend mm-hmm. that I see. So, you know, 5 years ago, I think right. it was very different.
Yeah, I think it's really changed mm-hmm. And it's evolving very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. When I first published Prince of Lions, originally back in 2010, even then the process was, it's been much more refined and honed mm-hmm. and, it almost seems like there was some sort of stigma with self-publishing mm-hmm. that I don't think is there anymore because, you know, we work with editors, we mm-hmm. work with cover artists, we're doing everything on the self-publishing side that a publishing mm-hmm. doesn't do for you. It's just at our expense.
Right.
But I think having a mix, being a hybrid, as mm-hmm. you're saying, you know, you yeah. do some traditional and some self, you know, I think it's good. I think, you know, it keeps your exposure out there. So sure. as you're working things through with a traditional publisher, if you keep mm-hmm. your other stuff going, you know, as a business model for an author, I think it's a great way to keep your name out there and
sure.
Keep readership interested. And yep.
Yeah. I mean, I think self-publishing has definitely evolved in 5 years, mm-hmm. 10 years, everything. You know, I've said this before, but, you know, 5 years ago, I read a self-published book and I was like, ugh, I'm not sure. And now I don't even question whether or not it's self-published yeah. or traditional published just because the way it has changed.
Yeah.
And, you know, self-publishing 5 years ago was I wrote this thing, I'm going to put it out there. Right. And now it's being edited and all the other things. It's just the person themselves doing it.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, and I think self-publishing has also grown so much within romance because it speaks to how much romance readers read
right.
and how we want all these books mm-hmm. all the time. Like,
yeah, you know, I just had lunch on Friday with Grace Burroughs. I'm probably familiar with her name, but we live sort of near each other, mm-hmm. the same region anyway. And so we have gotten together a couple times, and she was saying that with romance, it's the readers, they want a good story.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter necessarily, you know, where, who published it.
Right.
As long as it's a good story
yep.
and they can devour it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I agree with that. If it's presented well,
mm-hmm.
If it's an engaging story,
yep.
if it's well written, it doesn't,
yeah.
you know, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
For me, I would say the biggest thing that matters, and I know that this is like a contentious point within the romance community, but is price.
Yeah.
You know, and that's only because I read so much that mm-hmm. I can't afford to spend $8 on a book.
Right.
But, you know, but that's a whole nother story in and of itself.
Right.
But,
and
you
I
know.
Think that's changing too, mm-hmm. you know, with digital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you don't necessarily, when you're self-publishing a book, have as much control over the paperback price.
Right.
It has to be at a certain minimum threshold mm-hmm. or higher, just based on its size or based
yeah.
on how many pages. But, you know, with digital,
mm-hmm.
it seems that that's a huge, it's bursting.
Right.
And growing and growing and growing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as self-published authors, we have a lot of freedom
mm-hmm.
when it comes to, you know, Kindle or, you know,
right.
Books on devices.
Yeah.
And so I like to kind of offset that cost as mm-hmm. best I can
yeah.
with the Kindle.
Yeah. No. And I mean, from the reader perspective, I totally appreciate
yeah.
that, you know, because when I look at like books that are ebooks that are like $8, I'm like, I mean, I get why. But also, you know, if I'm reading 3 books a week, mm-hmm. I can't afford eight. I can't even afford for one of those books to be $8. But so, I mean, that's just, you know, a whole nother thing. But, you know, I think also self-publishing has helped kind of a lot more publishers are, you know, you have to be a really like the Nora Roberts that are charging, you know, $10, $12, $8. And the rest of them are kind of firmly in that like $3 to $6 range, mm-hmm. which is perfect. But, you know, that's another story. But yeah, I mean, it really is about it's central to if I'm going to get a good story and I know that the author is going to give me what I want, especially if it's an established author. I mean, my one click finger,
right?
You know, I was like, I almost sprained it last week. Like, I saw a description, I was like, done, I gotta get that book. But you know, who knows when I'll get to read it. But that's
right, that's yeah. It seems like the list of books that you're going to read grows and grows and grows and, mm-hmm. grows, and you just can't keep up with it.
Yeah, yeah. I always joke, I'm like, the reader struggle is very real. Because there's just so many good books. There's so many great authors putting out good books that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm like, I know that I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to feel good about it. I'm going to get my happy ever after. When am I going to have time to read it? But I'm going to get it anyway. But yeah, so this is your sole career currently?
Right now, yes. Mm-hmm. After graduate school, I worked for a little stint as a coordinator for the Gaithersburg Museum.
Okay.
I worked in clinical research mainly, though, managing biomedical research trials. Started in orthopedics research with an archaeology degree. Mm-hmm. Was actually, you know, if you're going to work anywhere in the medical field, it seemed orthopedics was the good landing spot because mm-hmm. I knew my skeleton already. And I actually really enjoyed the work. We moved out east, worked mm-hmm. for the Gaithersburg Museum for about a year, and then I ended up going back to biomed research, mm-hmm. Helping coordinate pediatric cancer trials. And it wasn't until we moved out to West Virginia and I was pregnant with our fourth son, and when I had him, it was a more difficult mm-hmm. labor and delivery. It was a preemie. And at that point, I decided I'm not putting this kid in daycare. I'm not, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to struggle or not. So I hung up my clinical research hat mm-hmm. and stayed home and thought I would really kind of throw myself into this. Mm-hmm. I was writing, you know, paralleling that with my mm-hmm. career. And, so it was kind of, it was neat to be able to step back and really start exploring.
Sure.
Exploring it. And once I put my mind to it, it's taken off.
So, mm-hmm. That's excellent.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I'm, you know, curious about is, so once you write it and you're like, this is fantastic, whether you put it out self-published, traditional, mix, whatever. So then how do you find an audience to be like, now I have this beautiful baby. Who's going to look at my baby?
You know, it was a process of learning how to market myself mm-hmm. And shamelessly market myself. Mm-hmm. Not be afraid to, you know, you're sitting in a cafe and someone sees that you've got the book out and mm-hmm. they ask you about it. Not being afraid to say, yes, this is my book. Mm-hmm. You know, are you interested? Here's my card. Mm-hmm. I started my author page. Mm-hmm. I started a website. I started getting people mm-hmm. to follow it. Little bit by little bit, but I think that like book signings and book fairs mm-hmm. and opportunities to meet readers face to face have been really helpful for me.
Sure.
That's the style of networking I think mm-hmm. I'm probably best at. I enjoy meeting people and I enjoy talking to them about mm-hmm. what I do and hearing about what they do, and I think once you forge that relationship, you know, your reader's much more interested in, like, oh, I'd like to actually mm-hmm. follow this author. You know, especially getting reader feedback, it tells me more, like, what I should be doing more of than mm-hmm. To grow my audience more. I mean, it's hard to, if you're like me and you're a bit of an introvert and you don't have a legion of friends ready to go out and share the news, mm-hmm. You know, you're really starting from scratch, building a reader base, a readership, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it if you are not afraid to continue to promote yourself, continue to put yourself out there, meet other authors, learn from them, mm-hmm. Listen to them present, listen to them talk. There's a lot. It's definitely a process. It's every day I learn something new.
Sure.
And think about how I could or couldn't incorporate that into, mm-hmm. My strategy to reach readers. I know once I've reached them, they tend to really like what mm-hmm. I have. So, it's a mix of a lot of things, but definitely you cannot be afraid to put yourself out there and be persistent.
That seems the biggest key is just to, and I'm learning this from trying to get this little, I call it my fledgling little podcast out there, trying to find people and trying to balance, should I talk about it? Am I talking about it too much? I don't know. I don't know. And I'm super introverted too. Yeah. And, and so it's that putting, you get it, putting yourself out there and, saying I'm doing this thing or I have this book or, mm-hmm. So it's a lot. But and I will say I get very excited because you posted that you were coming here. Yeah. And so I'm going to be to all the other authors that come on and be you should see what Erin Elizabeth did, Watson did, because she kept posting about it. You should do that too.
That's how the word gets out, mm-hmm. And I think this is it's a neat opportunity for us as authors, mm-hmm. but it's a neat way to grow sort of a community centered around books and centered around this genre mm-hmm. in this area. Mm-hmm. And, eventually you get more listeners.
Right.
And more people tuning in. And
right.
And
it's beneficial to both of us.
Yeah.
So, because I also... regionally, I'm blown away that there's so many authors localish, mm-hmm. Regional, that are, putting out books that are amazing. And I'm I want to talk to them all, I love it. And I'm so thankful to Eliza, who first was there's plenty of people in Frederick. And I'm no, there's not.
She's such a tenured author, though. And, she just has her, she's mm-hmm. She knows. And
right.
She knows a lot of other writers. And there are, once I started getting involved with Romance Writers of America, mm-hmm. RWA, and going to chapter meetings, mm-hmm. you start realizing that there's really just this amazing wealth of writers mm-hmm. just all around you. And,
right.
I will say that as in terms of establishing a career in mm-hmm. writing was one of the best decisions I made was joining RWA mm-hmm. and connecting with other authors and listening to their experiences. And, you build a foundation of, mm-hmm. A network with them.
Right.
And I see it being a longer, I don't see myself not being successful, but I see it being a longer, slower process if I mm-hmm. hadn't done that.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said, no matter what the thing is that you're doing, if you join the network of people that are also doing the thing, uh-huh. and uh-huh. some have been doing it for a long time or a little time, and, varying degrees of success, mm-hmm. I use that in quotes, but 'cause each person will define their own success, and being able to be I've found this other tribe of people who love this thing mm-hmm. and want to do this thing,
yeah,
supportive, and it feels good.
It is
good.
Very supportive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, especially when you're starting out, it's very encouraging when, you say, I have my first book come out, and mm-hmm. people, they clap for
yeah.
you, and they're like, good job. And,
yeah.
And they mean it.
Mm-hmm.
That's very encouraging.
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, I'm a fairly long time reader, but then I've been trying to do something else for quite some time. And to be able to say, okay, I'm really going to do this podcast. And at first I was kind of I don't know how I'm going to get to come on this podcast. I found a couple readers. I'm I'll get my sister to come. But, every author that I've reached out to has been I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'd love to. This is so exciting. And because basically at the end of the day, I'm a romance reader. You're a romance reader. I want to talk about romance.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're also an author and all that. But
right. But an author really isn't an author if they're not a reader first,
Right.
It's just part and parcel with it. And mm-hmm. we've all been reading something for as long as we can remember. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a lot of fun. So do you use a pen name? Or I think you use like a variation, or I'm not sure.
So it's no secret my first name's Erin, but I do write under my middle name, which is Elizabeth. So E. Elizabeth Watson. So that is my pseudonym. I'm able to put out some of my other romances that aren't historicals. I've got a few that are Western contemporaries. I've got one that's a paranormal medieval. One that's you were saying you like books around the 60s and 70s, and I have one that eventually, once I've really established my medieval readership, I'd like to put those out, and I might toy with a different pseudonym for those, just to not necessarily keep them separate, but keep them sort of categorized. This is this one line and this is this other subgenre. But as of now, Watson's a great name, and I like my middle name, and I thought, hey,
Might as well stick with it. Yeah, I'm always just curious about like the pen name, no pen name.
I think it differs. I think some authors like the anonymity. I think some authors like to have a name. Maybe they feel catchier than their given name. I think some just like the fact that they can. I mean, I think it really just depends. Yeah. And I like the idea of a different pen name for a different. But yeah, it just worked out.
Yeah.
Beth Watson. I'm like, that's it sounds good. So.
That's interesting. So, I mean, and some authors, there's a couple that I follow that they use slightly the variations, like Molly O'Keefe. I'm not sure if you've ever read her. She has like some Western historicals, like she's a ton under like Harlequin, like the super romance. And then some more contemporaries. And then she has like an erotica line that she, it's a slight altered name. But, but then, like, sometimes when she posts on Facebook, it's about any of them. So I'm like, well, I mean, I get it. But it must get confusing sometimes. So one of the things that I think is very interesting about romance is, we kind of get a bad rap outside of our own community. Even inside sometimes, but we won't even talk about that. But I'm always curious to know if you've experienced any sort of, like, shame moment, either by, like, other people in your life, like that when you say I write romance, or they're like, or not, maybe you haven't. So I'm just curious if
no shame, but then again, I don't I care what readers think about my books, but I don't really care what people think about me. So and I think that gives me a lot of freedom to say, hey, this is what I do. And I remember I was riding to work. I used to commute on the MARC train down to D.C. when I worked at Children's. And I sat next to a guy that time, and he knew I had like a bundle of papers. I was reading a manuscript and editing through it. And he asked me, he's like, are you a writer? And I said, yeah. And he said, what do you write? And I said, I write romance. And there was this uncomfortable kind of laugh, and then he was like, so do you like write sex scenes too? And I'm like, well, geez, it's not about the sex scene so much as it's about the journey. But I'm like, yes, I do. And for him, I think it was uncomfortable. For me, it was kind of funny. I will kind of get like a sort of an uncomfortable laugh sometimes if it's guys. But I sell a lot of books to guys too. It's funny when I have done author events and book signings. A lot of the times the buyer is a guy. So, and maybe it's the adventure aspect of the story that they really like too. I don't know. But never any moments of shame. I do have one family member who was, who cautioned me not to be so graphic with my sex scenes because it might turn off readers. And I'm thinking, I write like medium heat level here. I'm like, I'm not gonna turn off readers.
Right.
If anything, they might be like, give me more.
Yeah.
So that was kind of funny, but ultimately at the end of the day, I kind of do my thing. So
I mean I think that's what it's about. But like the guy on the MARC train, I think most people, they just don't and I think that's the reason why people want to attach like a lot of like stigma to it. It's because they just don't understand.
Oh, it's mommy
it
porn. Oh, it's it's soft porn. Lonely Housewives, there's all sorts of and I've heard them all. And honestly, before my husband even challenged me, I had never really given romance much thought, honestly. But when he said that, I kind of laughed. It was sort of the same stigmas in mm-hmm. my mind. And it wasn't until I started reading it where I was like, oh my mm-hmm. gosh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So I think exposure mm-hmm. would cure some of that. It's not going to be for everyone. I mean, some people are just going to like sci-fi. Or they're just going to like true crime, or they're just, you know. But I think that that would probably, you know, if you could get. Mm-hmm. I suspect that there's probably a secret readership of romance that's male. They probably buy them under their wife's names through Amazon or something. But I don't have any evidence to back that up.
That's okay.
They're good stories, you know.
They are. Yeah. And I think really that's what people are missing is like, these are great stories all about all sorts of things, you know. And one of the other authors that was in here, she was like, you know, she writes very feminist stories, and, you know, people are like, you can't read romance and be a feminist. Not true.
You know, I think you have to be almost. To not be afraid to tell the story you want to tell, mm-hmm. despite the fact you might get backlash. That's an important mm-hmm. part of being a feminist, is being true to yourself and following your ambitions.
So, you know, and then, like, I just recently I saw another author talking about how she's learned so much about herself and her own, like, misogyny, mm-hmm. like, ideals that she had that she didn't really realize. And because of, like, reading romance and writing romance, she's been able to challenge and learn from a lot of these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I think that's so true. Like, I've learned more about myself and probably the world in the last, you know, in context. But, you know, just about a lot of different things, you know, like, dear author, I read an article one time many years ago about, like, slut shaming. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I totally do that. And I see that in books. And now I try, you know, I'll call it out when I see it in a book, like, you know, this was slut shaming. And I mean, I probably would have come across it in outside of romance,
I mean, you're talking about in romance, I like to get inside my hero's heads and think about things from the guy's perspective and really, you know, make them an equal character to the woman. But I think a lot of times with romance, you know, really is an examination of how this woman is, something has happened to her, whether it's emotional, physical, whatever. And how she relates to that problem in the world that she's living in is, you have to examine everything in order to write an authentic character, I think. Especially with historicals, you know, just as you were saying, like, noticing, you know, misogyny or noticing slut shaming or what have you. And you do learn a lot about yourself as a reader. And I think that also goes for authors. I have learned through the writing process what kind of heroines I like to write. I like to write heroines that are unconventional, heroines that have some sort of a strength within the context of a society where that is not allowed, or that is frowned upon, or that is suppressed, in a world where they don't have rights because they are property to their fathers or their husbands. And I like creating these women that in some ways are 21st century women in the confines of this other world. And so they really do find a way to overcome or blossom or deal with this rigidity of their existence. Because I think that's, you know, valuable. And I think readers today, despite the character being from 800 years ago, you know, 1,000 years ago, will be able to relate to what she's struggling with. But yeah, definitely you pick up on it when you start reading, especially in romance. I think you're right, you know. But I think as authors, we have to examine, you know, everything that's influencing this girl. And what if our heroine is the girl that's been slut-shamed, you know, or has a reputation because she slept around with a couple guys in high school, or what, you know, what have you, and she has this social stigma upon her.
I agree. Well, one of the things is, like, sometimes when I'm reading, I'm like, how much do I want to be in fantasy versus, like, real life? But it's really hard to be in fantasy without some real life stuff coming in. Like, I was telling somebody yesterday, like, I just started this new book. It's a contemporary, but they meet the hero and the heroine meet at a zoo, and he like loves her from afar or whatever. He thinks she's beautiful, and then there's a photo op, and he stands next to her, and he's not spoken to her, but he puts his arm around her and touches her. And I'm like, I don't know, I feel like that violates consent. Yeah. I'm not sure if I can read this, right. Because of that simple thing. Now, like, because in real life, I think I would be offended if a man I don't know touches me. Like, even if I think he's very attractive, like, it would be very off-putting to me. But so I'm like, I don't know. Like, am I reading too much about this? I'm not sure. But still, sometimes it's very hard as the reader to be like, how much of these real things do I want, or how much can I block out? I mean, I know it's a book and it's fantasy, and I still enjoy it. But sometimes
I think it really depends too on when it's taking place. Like, if it was contemporary and in this, you know, the current pushes that we have towards. These are the boundaries, consent right. first. And we're really trying to educate our youth now to
exactly
know this as they grow up rather than having to learn it as, you know, after the fact. I think that those elements are probably more important that you know, when you're reading historicals or even, you know, depending on, I really think, you know, honestly, like 60s and earlier,
yeah.
you know, you just have to make it believable. You have to give your characters the typical interactions that they would have had. And that's where, you know, you toy with your characters' personalities. And
right.
You can examine ideas of consent through a historical lens and weave that into your story. And as long as it's believable.
Right.
You know, and you pull your readers right along.
Right. And I think that it's very situational because, yeah, if I'm reading a book where it's in the 1800s, it's very different. You know, they weren't like, hey, is it okay if I put my arm around you? No, it wasn't like that. It was very different. So you do have to weave those more traditional things that are traditional to now that readers may be more comfortable with. You have to, you know, do it a little differently, you know, whereas, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you know, some of those like bodice rippers, you never heard about consent.
Oh,
like,
no. And some of them are kind of rapish. Right? And, you know, I'll always read a book to the end. I think I've only ever put 2 romance novels down ever.
That's amazing.
Even if I don't like the story, I feel like I need to complete it, and I want a chance for, if the hero is rough like that or whatever, to redeem himself somehow. I don't know. I want it to be okay in the end. But some of them, I'm just like, oh, God, I would be terrified right now. This isn't, you know, I'm not, there's nothing about this. But, you know, different, again, like, the genre just keeps evolving.
It does. Right. And, you know, and I think sometimes, you know, and I think this all the time, just because it's something that I don't enjoy doesn't mean that there isn't somebody else that really enjoys this and it's their perfect fantasy or escape or whatever. And that's great. You know, like, I think sometimes I will say firmly that, you know, several years ago, I really was like looking down on people that were like, oh, you really like such and such, like. But now I'm just like, hey, that's not my thing.
Right.
But I'm happy that it's their thing and that's what they like.
Right. And
it's bringing them the happiness that I get out of other books, you know? So, to each their own.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not into any of like that weird bear shifting. I say weird, but some other people like really enjoy it or whatever. So, you know, I really like that about romance, that there really is something for everyone here.
Really is. And I like sampling a bit from everything. I've found authors and voices in every subgenre where I just, you know, vampires, awesome. I love the story and it's so good. And, you know, or the cowboys and sort of the sweet love, or, old fashioned love. I mean, if it's a good story, a good yarn, I'm on board. Yeah.
Usually I am too. I mean, and it really, again, with the reader struggle, there's just so much out there. And so sometimes it's hard for me to, you know, branch out a little bit because I'm like, well, I have this other book that I know I'm going to like or, you know, whatever.
Right.
So it's hard. And, you know, the ever growing to be read pile is just like, I can't even look at it anymore. Being like, if I stopped buying books today,
It's just not possible.
I know. It's not. But if I did, I could probably still have books for like 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a stack of to read books that I add to more than mm-hmm. I pull from. I use books as like my treat. It's the carrot I dangle in front of myself, like hurry up and get this work done, this project done, and then indulge in a book or two. But I add like 5 or 6 books to the stack, and I only take 1 or 2 off, you know, in between projects. So, or if I'm just totally burnt out on a project for the time being and I just need to recharge, I'll pick up someone else's book and read it. But yeah, there's not, when I was Christmas shopping and I went, one of the bookstores I went to, I went specifically for someone else, for some books for them. And the whole time I'm like, I must not venture over to romance. I must not venture over to romance. And before I knew it, I was like, okay, I'm going to take that one too.
So do you read a lot of paper books, like hardback or softcover, whatever?
You know, I read a lot of paperbacks. I like interacting with my book and holding it. And but I also, I have horrible eyesight, so I don't usually use any kind of e-reader. But I do have Kindle for PC, so I can like put up really large and read, you know, e-books like that too. And I'll do that when I'm traveling, put a book on there and just read it. But I like to hold a book too. I don't like the idea of killing a bunch of trees, but at the same time, I like to hold it and feel it and smell it. And
I always felt that way. I was like, when like Kindle first came out, I'm like, I'm never going to get that. Yeah. Like, I just love reading a book. And then I got like a Nook and I was like, but I can get a new book at like 1 a.m.
Right.
I can get a book. Like $4 all at once or, you know, whatever. And so it sometimes is very interesting to go back to reading a paper book. Like, I laugh at myself because, like, one night I was, like, reading a book. I was, like, really into it. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go to bed. And I, like, turn out the light. And I'm like, but now I can't see it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so used to reading, like, on the Kindle or some sort of e-device, you know. But, you know, but now I've gotten better that when I do read paper books, like I have a pen, I'm ready, so I can like make myself notes and, you know, it's just an adjustment. But yeah, I'm heavily reliant on my Kindle.
Yeah. Yeah. I've started really using my Kindle for PC just for the same reason. I mean, just the sake of ease. And, you know, I can be working late at night and I'm like, oh, but I really want to start this. And, you know, my husband, you know, if he's sleeping, I'm not going to go turn a light on and just sit there and read. I would like to. Mm-hmm. He's always like, go read somewhere else. So, but, you know, having that screen blazing. But I can just pull that up and read something and then get back to work. And, you know, I can lounge on. Yeah, it's just easy to transport your library with you.
Absolutely.
Something so small.
Yep. So you have older children, like teenagers. Okay, so do they know that you read romance? Do you have girls? So?
Oh, yeah, no, I have 4 sons.
Okay.
I have an 18-year-old, 16-year-old, and then 5 and 2. Mm-hmm. We had a surprise. Oh. So we ended up with an 11-year age gap between our 2 middle sons. They know I read romance. They know I write it. You know, and I've always said, you know, when you're an adult, you can read it if you want.
Yeah.
So, you know, Prince of the Lions has some strong themes in it, and they're not all a lovey-dovey romance. The heroine, she really suffers, and you experience some of that with her, and it's not at the hands of the hero. I just can't do that. But the villain of the story is vile to her. And so because of that, I've always, like, I don't know, they're my kids. Yeah, just be 18 for years.
No,
but
no,
I
understand.
Hide it from them.
Yeah.
You know, they know I'm a voracious reader. There's always a romance book with some guy's awesome chest, like, lying there. And, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for the longest time, like, my son would be like, what are you reading? And I'd just be like, a book.
Yeah.
You know, but now I'm like, a romance book. Why do you keep asking me this? Like,
You know, at first, I think
it doesn't matter.
Similar.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily want to share it, but then it just became obvious, you know?
Right.
Like, why hide it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I'm an unapologetic reader at this point. You know, like, I used to kind of, if somebody would ask me, I would kind of shy away from, like, answering what I'm reading. But now I don't care.
Yeah.
Ask me, I'll tell you, you know.
And I think that's actually, you know, we're laughing about it, but I think that's important, too, for making it socially acceptable mm-hmm. and removing that stigma by mm-hmm. not being afraid to say, hey, I'm reading the Laird such and such,
right.
you know, and it's awesome.
Right.
This adventure is great. Or, you know, geez, it's like in the Highlands and there's mm-hmm. all this political stuff.
Right.
And she's like so innocent, you know, like just not being afraid to tell people about mm-hmm. it as they would, like if they were telling you about Harry Potter or
right.
they were about any other kind of, mm-hmm. you know,
Well, and I think that's one of the things about romance and, like, currently, like, the current culture of it. So I think that we are kind of stepping out, we collectively, the community, are kind of, you know, we're kind of branching out into a more normalization and destigmatized with things.
Right.
Because, like, although I think this is a poor example of it, but, like, 50 Shades of Grey,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's more recognized, again, it's not my favorite, and I think it's a poor example of it, but it's opening it up for people to say, like, yeah, I read that book, like,
yeah.
you know, and maybe they liked it, maybe they didn't, whatever.
Right. They were wildly popular,
mm-hmm.
and whether people loved it or hated it, they still read it, you
right.
know, and they still bought it,
mm-hmm.
and devoured it, and, you know, maybe it wasn't, you know, as some people have pointed out, or maybe people who are more involved in the BDSM community have said, maybe this isn't
mm-hmm.
you know, an accurate representation. I think it really kind of thrust a spotlight
mm-hmm.
on romance and made people less afraid
yeah.
to pick them up and not apologize for it, you know.
Right, absolutely.
Or be ashamed by it or hide it, you know, like
right.
trying to hide the covers or sitting on
yeah.
you know, public transit or, you know.
Yeah. You know, but then, like, the Washington Post, Sarah McLean writes, like, every month, like, her top books or whatever, and it's in the Washington Post, and they do reviews, and, you know, like, Book Riot and Bustle
mm-hmm.
and, you know, a lot of different sites are kind of talking more about romance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so happy that, like, more people are talking about it, because we shouldn't be ashamed,
yeah.
like, whether inside or outside of the community. Like, I read romance.
Right.
I like it.
You know, it's, I had a conversation once with a reader at a book signing,
mm-hmm.
and it was a man. And, you know, we were talking about, it was one of those where he was like, oh, it's a romance.
Mm-hmm.
And we just... thankfully, he was interested enough that we stood and,
mm-hmm.
or he stood, I thought, we chatted. And, you know, I said, you know, if you've ever gone to the movies and you watch a rated R movie and it's got this very open
mm-hmm.
sex scene in it, and no one is shaming that.
Right.
You know, we're visually devouring that whole story
mm-hmm.
from beginning to end. And that love scene or that whatever is part of that story, but it's not what makes the story. And I said it's the same thing with romance.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the story, and it's certainly an important element to the story, but it doesn't necessarily have to make the story, like when you're talking about open or closed
right.
door. But why is it okay for mass consumption for film, but it's not for books?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's more personal with a book, and I
mm-hmm.
think maybe there's like, oh, what are they doing all by themselves? But
why does it matter?
But exactly, I'm
yeah.
just like, it's kind of the same thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you think about it. And you know, if you like a really good story, you should read my book,
right?
And he bought a copy. So.
Yeah, I mean, and that's
yeah.
really what it
yeah.
comes down to is, you know, it's a really good story. I mean, sometimes it's not a great story, but most of the time it is, and.
Mm-hmm.
Or we hope, or it's a great story to somebody.
Right.
And
they have their audience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you were asking about how you find your readers
mm-hmm.
and how you crack into that. But once you do,
mm-hmm.
you realize that there is an audience that wants what you're
mm-hmm.
making, and they're not getting it from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're coming back and
right.
wanting more and more. I think that's what 50 Shades really did, is it thrust open this door on something that people were missing,
mm-hmm.
they wanted. That wasn't available, or
mm-hmm.
was only available, hush, hush, keep it a secret, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it wasn't socially acceptable to even, and I think for that reason alone, it was probably really
mm-hmm.
important.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. Yeah. I mean, it's, like I said, it's been great, and, you know, to even to say, like, I read it, I didn't care for it, you know, it's problematic. I enjoy that people have read it, and I will say that reading that got me heavily into romance, because
mm-hmm.
I was, like, looking for other things.
Right.
You know, and so that really kind of, I mean, I was reading it before, but more like women's fiction too. Mm-hmm. And that probably tipped me over into like a full-time romance reader, because I'm like, I've got to find more books that are like this, but different. Mm-hmm. Maybe better, maybe worse. I don't know.
Right. But your interest, you knew that you wanted something, mm-hmm. and you had to go find it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a readership for just everything. About everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, so in 2017, you have your new book coming out on the 14th, mm-hmm. so Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Fantastic. Fun tie in there. And so, is there anything else big coming up for you in 2017? Are you going to any big book events?
Yes. So, every year in Martinsburg, there's the Chocolate Fest and Book Fair. Authors are in different shops throughout the downtown. Mm-hmm. And, I participated last year. I'll be doing that again this year. I work one day a week at a little bookstore called Bank Books, which is downtown, and so I'll be their author. Their featured author for the book festival. Yes,
in Martinsburg?
Clarify. Yes.
Okay.
And so that's coming up. I don't have dates for it. Last year it was April, so it's probably about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I hope to be involved in the Baltimore Book Fest. Mm-hmm. Like last year, I was involved in that and mm-hmm. was on the panel, and hopefully I'll be able to participate again this year. Toying with the idea of the West Virginia Book Fair, which will be in Charleston.
Oh, okay.
I didn't do it last year just because I had the Baltimore one coming mm-hmm. up later, but interested in doing that this year. But yes, in April, April-ish, mm-hmm. since I don't have dates yet, I'll be in the Chocolate Fest and Book Fair in Martinsburg, West Virginia.
You'll have to keep me posted on that, because maybe I can do like a mobile show.
yeah, it's becoming a big deal. I think it'll be the fourth or the fifth one maybe. Don't quote me on that. But you know, they're getting more and more involved, mm-hmm. and there's authors from across, you know, every genre.
Mm-hmm.
Horror and nonfiction, mm-hmm. and you know, whatever. I'll be doing that. I don't have anything else planned at this point, mm-hmm. just as the
it's still very early. It's very early in the year.
I keep an upcoming events page mm-hmm. on my website. Mm-hmm. So anyone who goes to my website, elizabethwatson.com, can just find that page. And as things get added, I put that on there.
That's great. And I'll link to it also on my page. Okay. So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's great. Okay. Yeah. Baltimore Book Festival, I think I just went this first time, or maybe I went another time. I went another time and it was at a different location. It wasn't on the harbor. Okay. It was like, I can't remember. I'm not very good with, I'm directionally challenged. But I went this past fall and it was on the harbor and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that they have that whole, the MRW tent, you know, because it's like all just, I shouldn't say it's all women. There are more men there too.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you get to see names, authors of people that you're like, I love her.
Yeah.
I was like nervous to talk to people and I'm like, they're just regular people like me. But yeah, it's amazing. I will go to it every, I think I only went one day this year. Next year I'll try to go more, but it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a neat community. Mm-hmm. The Maryland Romance Writers is mm-hmm. my chapter. So neat. Very down to earth, normal. You know, you mm-hmm. wouldn't even know running into them, passing a grocery store. You know, romance writer.
Exactly.
So,
So, are there any particular books or any like series that you, as a reader, are looking forward to in 2017 that you know of?
I'm looking forward to. It's a contemporary. The name is escaping me now. But I read her first two books, by Sophie Jordan. And I know that there's a third book coming out soon. So mm-hmm. I'm just kind of, I keep sort of checking back and mm-hmm. seeing when the date is. I haven't written it down. If I do, I'll just be sitting there staring like, when's it coming?
Uh-huh.
I just devoured the first two books. Mm-hmm. I devoured the first one. And then when the second one came out, I was like, I have to get it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like these criminal romances, mm-hmm. you know, bad boy kind of. But yeah, they were super engaging. I really like Monica McCarty's books. So as she mm-hmm. more. She has a whole Highland Guard series, and then she does some other, they're historical, Scottish mm-hmm. historicals. I'll probably, you know, I always pick up a book by her.
Mm-hmm.
But I've read everything in the Highland Guard series, love mm-hmm. it. I'm a pretty open-minded reader, too, so I don't get fangirlish on mm-hmm. a lot of authors. Mm-hmm. I like to pick and read new mm-hmm. titles, so every now and then I'll just go through the bookstore and I'll find a new cover or something I haven't looked at before. Mm. Read the back. If I like it, I take it. So,
mm-hmm.
yep.
That's the way to do it. This one looks like it might be interesting.
Yeah, you know, if it's got a cover that jumps out at me, and it, and then the description. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times the cover jumps out, but you're like, maybe it's not really my story. But and sometimes I'll purposefully look for a cover that doesn't jump out at me, so I can read the back and see what maybe I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a very open-minded reader. Mm-hmm. There's a few authors I really love in terms of any time they publish something, I know I'm going to like it.
Right.
But I'm always exploring for new names, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the same way, I try to really be open to, like, other authors.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling somebody else, I'm like, I'm a huge, I look at the cover and I can, I try not to, but I can almost tell instantly whether or not I'm going to like what's in it. But I think that also speaks to the way that they've really gotten, like, as an industry, how they do covers.
Mm-hmm.
And or, like, you know, I was saying to somebody, like, if the cover has, like, a lot of pink on it, I feel like it's going to be, like, a sweet read.
Uh-huh.
And I'm probably not going to like it. No, I don't know. Or it's not what I'm looking for at the time.
Right.
But, you know, I think that there's some of these, like, visual cues that are going to tell me right away. And then, of course, I'll read the description and be like, okay, this is probably for me.
Yeah.
I'll read it.
Yeah,
you know.
We totally judge books by their cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think across the board, I mean, in any genre, but I think specifically in romance, that cover tells you so much about what's going to be in that book.
Right, right.
Yeah. Because, you know, if it's like a bare-chested man, I can pretty much guarantee you there's not going to be closed-door sex in that.
Right, right.
It's just how it is, you know. So, you know, and there's just other things too. But yeah, but that's great. You probably are a more open reader than I am. And I am amazed that you've only, like, not finished, like, two romance books. Like,
Yeah, and I, you know, one of them, it was, so I totally like the open door stuff, and this one, it was just, it seemed gratuitous.
Mm-hmm.
I was exhausted for this girl. I was like, oh my gosh, leave her alone, let her sleep. Like, it's been nonstop.
Yeah.
And there's, but I didn't feel the chemistry between them yet, so, he just seemed kind of this rabid, like, she's my wife now, and this girl just seemed like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do, it's like constant, and I think for that reason alone, for me personally, like you were saying, there's readers for everything, and this is a very successful author, and so, you know, there are people who liked that. For me, I wanted a little bit more plot development, character development before it got to that point, but just that seemed how it should work for that story. These people didn't know each other when they first met. And, yeah, there was one other that, with my personal taste, the heroine was just really ditzy. And it was supposed to be funny, but it wasn't for me. I was like, it's not funny. But, yeah, again, it was my personal preference and a very successful author. So it was a huge readership. And it was an entertaining story. It's the story element was really entertaining. I just wasn't connecting with the heroine.
Yeah.
So, so much of a point that I didn't want to keep reading.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very rare. I'll force myself to read through something, even if I'm not enjoying it, just because I don't want to leave it open.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, just quickly, because so Emily Duvall was here last week, and I'm not sure if you know her. She's local, but she's wonderful. And we were talking briefly about unlikable heroines.
Yeah.
Because we collectively, I think, as the romance readers, we're so hard on the heroines.
Yeah.
And we have just such high expectations of who they'll be, what they'll be, how they'll act, what they'll do, you know.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I think, like, we're really hard, because I was saying I was reading a book where I felt the heroine was unlikable. And I'm not opposed to reading an unlikable heroine.
Right.
In fact, I like unconventional stories. I like unconventional people. I like it when some of these norms that you find in romance a lot are challenged.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't opposed to her so much as, like, as I kept getting into the book and I read it for a review, I even said, like, I feel like I didn't have enough backstory about what was making her so unlikable. Mm-hmm. I don't care if she's unlikable, but tell me, like, why? Like, where is this coming from? Like, and I just didn't feel that connection. Mm-hmm. Like, sure, she does these things, but, like, and you don't always get to know. So, yeah. You know.
And that's one of the reasons I'll make myself keep reading, mm-hmm. Rather than putting a book down, because sometimes you get to the end and maybe you didn't like the character, but the story was really good and you're like, it couldn't have been any other way. Now right. that you're looking back on it, that's why they were mm-hmm. doing that or like that, because, I mean, it can't be any, it just, mm-hmm. This is the natural order yeah. of things in this book, you know, and you come to realize, no, it had to be like that. And I think it's those moments where I say to myself, no, actually, you know what, that was a really good book, because mm-hmm. I get it now. Mm-hmm. I get what the author was trying to create. Maybe that wasn't a hero or a heroine that mm-hmm. I would have ever wanted to know, but it worked in mm-hmm. that story.
Yeah.
And for that reason, it redeemed itself for right. me. And so I never like to leave a book
yeah.
open-ended I get for that reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been surprised many times when I'm reading. I'm like, oh, I can't put it down. But geez, what mm-hmm. are you doing? And then, yeah, I get to the end. I'm like, okay, thank mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, it's delivered.
I read a book last year that made me so angry. The hero was the worst. The worst hero I have ever read. And I read it for a review, and I gave it a low grade. And I said, like, the hero was, in my mind, no redemption. Like, mm-hmm. he was the worst. So, let's see, I read that in June. So, 7 months later, it still sticks in my head.
Yeah.
So, she did her job
yeah.
as an author. And yeah. I totally recognize
and
that.
When you think about it from that perspective, what some people might say is a horrible book because they couldn't get past that.
Mm-hmm.
You come to realize, no, it was profound, and it has made its mark on me, and
right.
that's actually the sign of a very good book,
right?
You know?
Yeah. Right, and I included it in my like top list, and I was like, you know, I was very angry about this hero. he did unforgivable things, as far as I was concerned, you know. But again, 6-7 months later, it still sticks out to me. And somebody who, you know, I admit, like, I read between 150, almost 200 books a year. Like, they don't all stick out,
yeah, yeah.
You know, and so
yeah.
Yeah, one that does, even though I hated him a lot, you know, I mean, but yeah, so I'm not opposed to unlikable, I like unconventional, I like it, I like sweet though too,
yeah.
So, you know, sometimes I'm like, it's so sweet, I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
They're so wonderful. But anyway, so, yeah, so definitely send me that information about the Martinsburg thing,
sure.
And I'll, like I said, maybe I'll do like a mobile show, because yeah. I'm trying to be more involved, and I haven't been very successful in finding things super local,
mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that as the nature of romance becoming more popular, if you will, even though it was always popular amongst us, but more
yeah.
mainstream popular,
right.
You know, more local readers will have the opportunity to go to things. Although I know readers will travel, but mm-hmm. still, you know, it's a lot easier to have something that's 40 minutes away, 10 minutes away, or whatever,
yeah.
than hours, days.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with me
yes,
today.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right. You're welcome. I'm glad you had fun.
Yes.
Romance Romp is produced by Graham Cullen and Chris Sands. Theme music provided by Kelsey Luce. Please check out our other podcasts at FNP Podcast.